Hello and welcome to the All 80s Movies Podcast, the podcast where we talk about the blockbusters, the flops, and everything in between from one of the freshest decades for movies, the 1980s. I'm your host, Bill Banton. Along with me on this journey back to the 80s is my co-host, Jason Masek. Hello, Jason.
Hello, Bill Banton. What's up, man?
Doing well. How about yourself?
I'm just living the dream. LTD, buddy. LTD.
That is all we can do. So, listeners, this week we have a special mini-sode for you. Jason and I are going to list five of our favorite sidekick movie characters from the 80s. Sidekicks.
Woohoo!
They may not have received top billing, but they certainly left an impression on us when watching the movies they were in.
Yes, sir, Bill Banton. I actually wrote out some criteria for sidekick qualification, if you will indulge me.
Yes, let us hear this. Hopefully I met all the qualifications.
Well, I was just going to actually add an addendum here to this, is that the sidekick doesn't have to fulfill all of this criteria, but at least one of the criteria.
Oh, okay, good.
So not all.
I should be all right.
Or a combination of these criteria. So here's the list I came up with. Number one, the sidekick should be either best friend or partner of the main character. Two, always acts as backup when the main character gets into any physical or verbal altercation. Number three, always acts as backup when pursuing a romantic interest in a bar. Four, would take a bullet for the main character. Five, saves the life of the main character. Six, defends the character of the main character, even if the main character is in the wrong. Seven, takes on menial tasks so the main character can be free to pursue the hero's journey. And eight, gives main character advice and emotional support in order so that the main character stays on the right path. Just some criteria for sidekick qualification.
Excellent criteria, Jason. And I think all of my sidekicks at least make a couple of those. So I should be okay.
Yeah.
Right, so good. I don't think I'm going to get any sidekick blowback.
I hate sidekick blowback, man.
I know.
No, and you know, whenever you get a case of sidekick blowback, it's nasty. It's hard to shake. Yeah.
So moving on, as always, Jason and I have not discussed our list with one another. So each of us will be as surprised as you. And again, I'm going to put our matches at 1.5. And Jason, I think I'm taking the under on this.
Okay, really?
Yeah. I think our taste in movies are different enough that I don't think we're going to have matching sidekicks. There's a couple out there. But yeah, I'm going under the 1.5. And then for me, my only parameter for going into my sidekick list was I didn't pick anyone in a movie we've already discussed in an episode.
Copy that.
So I figured we already talked about the movie. We probably already talked about the sidekick character. So leave it be. Let's discuss our lists. I didn't put mine in any particular order. Jason, why don't you start us off? Who is your first sidekick?
Absolutely. Let's talk about our favorite sidekicks. Number one, I'm going to give you some clues. Yeah, yeah. We don't want to just come right out with it.
Little guessing game that we normally do when we do our little mini-sodes.
That's right.
All right, Jason, what are your clues? Let's see if we...
I like how you put
play
that.
Play along.
Though. It's just like so cute. You know, little guessing game with our little mini-sodes. So here we go. Let's play. So this particular sidekick is from a film that was released in the year 1988.
Okay.
I can't tell you who it was directed by because you'll just know immediately. So I'll save that.
Okay.
I'm going to give you a couple of the more vague taglines, I should say, or like secondary taglines. Here's one I'd never heard before for this particular film. It will blow you through the back wall of the theater.
No, it's not helping.
All right. I'm trying to think of another one. This one is really short and brief, which doesn't really make any sense. I don't even know why this is a tagline, but this will probably give it away. On the 40th floor. That's it. That's the tagline.
Wow. So it's just Die Hard?
You got it, man. You got it. That's it.
Ah.
Oh, man. So now you got to guess the sidekick.
All right. So we got John McClane and... Oh, it's got to be... Oh, it's got to be our man, Al Powell.
Nailed it.
Oh, my God. I'm totally blanking on the actor, though.
I can help you. Since I wrote it down. It's one of our all-time favorites, man. It's Reginald.
Reginald Johnson.
Vel Johnson.
Okay.
That's right. Reginald VJ.
Oh, that's a good one.
Although the Vell Johnson is actually one word. I always think it's like two, but it's Reginald Vell Johnson. We love us some Reggie Vell Johnson. Sergeant Al Powell from Die Hard. Man, I love this. It's funny because it's not mainly like the traditional sidekick or in the traditional sense of sidekick. When you think of a sidekick, you just kind of think of, especially like in cop films, they're usually partners or somebody that they're always tagging along and they're together in person. But that is not the case in this particular film. And it's weird for me how he always pops up when I think of sidekicks as one of the first or second classic sidekicks in cinematic history for me. It's just maybe I'm just a huge fan of Die Hard. But like we've said multiple times on this podcast, Reginald Vell Johnson has to be one of the most likable actors of all time. And what I like so much about his role in Die Hard as Sergeant Al Powell, as the police officer sidekick to New York detective John McClane, is the fact that he never sees John McClane face to face the entire movie until the very end. So that's why I'm saying in the traditional sense of sidekick, this is where it's a little different in Die Hard. He actually never sees McClane until the end. Their whole relationship develops over their communication via walkie-talkie. Al Paulo is on the ground outside the Nakatomi building, and John is fighting terrorists single-handedly inside the tower. And Al's the first police officer on the scene to investigate. He's the one that deduces that McClane is not just another terrorist inside the building, but he's actually a cop trying to fend off the terrorists and save the hostages. They get to know one another cop to cop via walkie-talkie as Al is giving him the info as to what's happening on the ground outside. And as their back and forth progresses, they get to know one another and they bond throughout this traumatic situation and circumstance. And man, one of my favorite scenes is when Al, like they're having this heart to heart, and Al opens up and he tells McClane over the walkie how he ended up behind a desk because he shot a kid by mistake. And it's quite a tender scene, actually. And then McClane opens up and he tells Al to give his estranged wife, Holly, a message that he's sorry. Basically says, I've told Holly a million times that I love her, but I've never told her I'm sorry. And it's just, you know, so they have this back and forth, they connect. And then in the end, when McClane saves the day, or so we think, he exits the building. He comes down, comes outside with Holly. And we discover that one of the main terrorists, Carl, is not dead. He rises up, coming back to life to shoot McClane. And Al, our guy, musters up the courage, pulls his gun, and kills Carl, saving McClane's life. He saves John McClane's life in the end. Awesome ending. And it's just great seeing McClane and Al meet face-to-face for the first time at the end. It's great. It's so heartwarming. It's a wonderful, wonderful conclusion to one of the best action movies of all time. Reginald Vell Johnson just has the super warm and friendly face with a smile that makes you feel better, man. His character is not only a fellow cop to McClane, and he's not only the eyes and ears on the ground, but he's there for emotional support and becomes a true friend and shows up in the sequel. It's a great relationship arc.
Excellent sidekick to start us off with. I don't even think I would have thought of him for the list. Well, obviously, I didn't put him on my list, so I didn't think of him. But yeah, that's a good pick. Way to get Die Hard in there.
Thanks, man. Who's your first choice for favorite sidekick of the 80s?
All right, so I'm kind of doing a 180 from you on my first sidekick. So the movie came out in 1985, and the tagline for this movie is, you might get it, so just think about what I'm saying, okay?
Keep an open mind here. Go.
You've blown up your neighbor's mom. Your 7-year-old brother has better luck with women than you do. Your girlfriend has a new boyfriend. Relax. You're never.
Oh, man. I'm blanking. My mind is not open enough.
Okay. The director. You should get it here. Savage. Steve Holland.
Oh, damn it. I know that director. I know the name. We've talked about him.
Correct.
Did we do another one of his films on our podcast? Is that why?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Last year's Summer at the Cinema series.
I'm an idiot. I don't know. I'm just not thinking. I do not have my thinking cap on.
Main character.
Blown up the neighbor's mom?
Yes.
Okay. Main character.
It's a comedy.
Right. I assumed. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. In 1985. I don't know, man. I don't know.
Better Off Dead.
Oh, jeez. Oh, of course. Right. One Crazy Summer.
Yes.
Was what we did. Oh, my God.
My sidekick.
Okay, here we go.
Charles DeMar, played by Curtis Armstrong.
Oh, God. Man, I am just, I need to get sorted out here. Okay, that's please okay. continue.
So Charles DeMar, who, Lane, I've been going to this high school for 7.5 years. I'm no dummy. I know high school girls.
Love it. Love it.
And then other wisdom from Charles DeMar, which I love, is when Lane has to do the race on the K-12, hopefully win back his girlfriend. And Charles just tells him, just go down real fast. And then he starts snorting the snow. And it's like, this is pure snow. It's everywhere. Do you have any idea what the street value of this mountain is? That line is so goddamn funny.
That's a great line.
Charles DeMar, Curtis Armstrong.
Yeah.
We talked about him in Risky Business.
I was going to say, how many sidekick great, like, iconic sidekicks has he played?
Yeah, originally Booger had popped to my head, but I was that movie is such an ensemble that was like too many. Whereas Charles is really Lane's best friend in the movie. So I went Charles DeMar instead. So that's my first sidekick.
Great choice. I love it. Curtis Armstrong. Great. Better Off Dead, man. Obviously, I need to see that movie again. It's been some time. I mean, I'm a fan. I want my $2. I don't belong on this podcast. Woof. Great choice. Great choice, Charles DeMar. Okay. Moving on.
Yes.
To my second choice.
Okay.
All right. Let's see. This film was released in 1984.
Okay.
It's a big one. It's directed by a pretty big director. You'll probably have heard of him when I tell you who it is. Here's a couple of taglines.
Mm-hmm.
The hero is back. Here's another one. The man in the hat is back.
Oh, are we going short round here?
That's right.
Okay.
That is correct, sir.
I had thought about him.
Yeah, absolutely. Dun, 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 dun. Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, directed by Steven Spielberg. Yes, my choice is Short Round, played by Kehi Kwan. First of all, I do love the Short Round theme by John Williams on this soundtrack. That's a terrible rendition, but great music. And second, man, what a time for Kehi Kwan in the 80s. First, this film, they place the ultra-lovable Data in Goonies.
Yes.
Which was, wait, Goonies was that 85 or 86? I wanted to say 85.
Yeah, I think 85.
But Kehi Kwan, he disappears for decades and reappears just recently in the widely acclaimed Everything Everywhere All at Once, which is supposed to be awesome. And I'm ashamed to say I haven't seen it yet.
That makes two of us.
Yeah, Short Round, man. Not only a wonderful sidekick to Indiana Jones in this film, but he's the comic relief. He's the getaway driver for Indy in the opening action sequence at Club Obi-Wan. He has the best lines, like during that car chase. Hey, lady, you call him Dr. Jones. No time for love, Dr. Jones. And then on the prop plane just before it's going to crash, no more parachutes. He plays cards with Indy in the jungle because they're buddies. They're playing cards. You cheat, Dr. Jones. You cheat. Short Round is Indy's great friend. He's a partner in crime, getting into a lot of trouble with Indy. But he really has a tough task in this movie in saving Indy's life. I mean, in this movie, he ends up searing him with a fiery torch.
Yes.
In order to snap Indy out of a trance that he's under. Then Short Round ends up duking it out with the little Maharaja, who's been using a voodoo doll to harm Indy, and ends up saving Indy from the rock crusher. So he basically saves Indy's life twice in this movie. He helps free the child slaves. He accompanies Indy on a wild coal mine cart chase and a crazy rope bridge sequence. And Short Round's constantly risking his life alongside Indy. He's a little badass kid. Might be called Short Round, but he's got a big heart. He's always there for Indy. I think Kehi Kwan is great in this, and he's got great chemistry with Harrison Ford. Solid child actor. Very, very funny. So that's my second choice.
No, that is a good choice. And I remember watching that as a kid and really liking him. And you would think growing up and then watching it, you'd be like, oh, he's just annoying sidekick. No, he still works. I still really enjoy him. I was kind of bummed they didn't bring him back in some capacity.
Oh, totally.
Yeah, that would have been cool.
He could come back in Indy 5.
That's true.
As a kid, I was always quoting him, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Because then Goonies comes out, and the same thing with Data. You're always just, he's great. You're always quoting him.
Hold on, lady. We're going for a ride.
That's right. What's your next choice?
Okay, so my next choice is from 1980, and I had to find the most generic tagline for this because if I used any of the other ones, you'd get it right away.
Uh-huh.
All right. So the tagline for this movie in 1980 is "The Battle Continues."
The Empire Strikes Back?
Of course. Yes. Yeah.
Outstanding.
So I didn't go with the one I think you would think right away. This is my only non-human sidekick.
Oh, my God. Okay. I love it.
I went with R2-D2.
Well, there's our first match.
That's we got a first match.
Yep. I put him. He was number five. Good old R2. Okay. Our lovable astromech droid.
I thought you would have went Chewbacca. I thought I was going to get you on that one.
I wanted to be like you, Bill. I wanted to choose a non-human. I wanted to zag a little bit. Although Chewbacca is very much a non-human as well. But
right.
It was a tough choice. Please, please tell us why you chose R2-D2 and then I'll chime in.
Yeah. So, I mean, we're introduced to R2 in Star Wars, of course, and him and C-3PO and their iconic partnership. But in The Empire Strikes Back, we really have our heroes break off. And we have Luke, his basically paired with R2-D2, while C-3PO goes off with Han Solo, Chewie, and Princess Leia, while they go to Dagobah so Luke can further his Jedi training. And you really just see the devotion of R2 to Luke and how much Luke depends on R2 to take care of things. And there's some great comic relief. I still remember like it was yesterday, seeing in the theater in the scene when they land in Dagobah and R2 tries to get off the X-Wing and falls in and everyone's like, oh, and you see the creature come.
The dragon snake.
And, you know, he gets shot across the swamp and even with the little periscope thing and he's whistling and everyone's giggling at it.
Yeah.
He's such a lovable little robot. He has a lot of key points in that movie. I mean, he's the one figures out the hyperdrive to the Millennium Falcon is busted and he fixes it. He does the distraction on Cloud City when Lando's trying to, you know, rescue Han from Boba Fett or even just get them off Bespin.
Yeah, he like shoots that. It's like a fire extinguisher that he shoots out and it's basically a smoke screen that distracts the stormtroopers.
And I don't know. It's just one of those things. It's just like I watched that movie so many times. I almost felt like I actually knew what R2-D2 was saying through his beeps.
Correct.
And like even the scene in the beginning when Luke is attacked by the Wampa and R2's out there trying to scan for life forms in the freezing cold where there's no chance that he's going to be able to find them. But he's a robot. He's supposed to do what he's told, but he's going to stay out there and see if he can find his owner.
Right.
Probably the best robot sidekick out there.
Oh, no question about it. Best droid sidekick. And I couldn't agree more. Obviously, I had him on my list because he's the best. I think also for me, he probably was my first emotional connection to a Star Wars character, like someone that I genuinely cared about and was my favorite character. Probably the first Star Wars action figure I had. I think that's actually correct. I love that action figure. Just the little rotating dome head that would click. And you just kind of, even though it didn't have wheels, but I was always jealous of anybody that had the remote control R2-D2, the larger version that had the wheels and you could wheel around. R2-D2, the best. I mean, where do you begin? Astromech droid. Throughout the Star Wars films, man, talk about the best sidekick. R2-D2 is a friend to C-3PO, Padme Amidala, Anakin Skywalker, Leia Organa, Luke Skywalker, and Obi-Wan Kenobi. He's everybody's friend. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we, growing up with the classic trilogy, and in the 80s, we had Empire and then Return of the Jedi in 83, we kind of associate him a little bit more with Luke Skywalker, or sidekick to Luke Skywalker. But you mentioned some great moments in Empire, which is my favorite movie of all time. And I love the fact that he awaits Luke in Luke's X-Wing after the Battle of Hoth, accompanies him to Dagobah, like you said, gets swallowed by the dragon snake in the swamp, gets spit across the whole whatever, lands, you know, has that great squeal as he goes and then spits out the mud, the goop. I mean, has some great moments. He actually protects Luke's belongings from a very rude Yoda who's rummaging through all Luke's stuff and then ends up taking a beating from Yoda with the stick.
Yes.
You know, he's just there, always there for Luke. So he's taken a couple beatings and then he gets put outside while Luke is having a nice little one-on-one by the fire, having a little fireside chat with Yoda inside, Who's outside hanging out in the rain?
Pouring rain.
That's R2. That's a good friend. Just waiting, hanging out. He's always been there. I mean, he's a Swiss Army knife. Like you mentioned, the communication through his beeps and boops is absolutely adorable. He's always, so it's that emotional connection because you're just, it's all feeling and it's just easy to connect to him. And he takes a lot of shit from 3PO.
Oh, yeah.
The fact of the matter is he's always in the right place at the right time over so many years throughout this Star Wars saga, like at the crucial moments. And he's just saving everybody's ass.
Yep.
And especially, I mean, we could go over the moments in Jedi, right? 1983 film. Where he saves Luke's ass and Luke ends up kicking ass in the whole Jabba sail barge battle on Tatooine. He ends up using his mini saw blade to cut loose everybody from the Ewok net trap on Endor. Yeah, it's R2.
Yeah, I felt like he was more sidekicky in Empire than Jedi.
Mm-hmm. He's got more to do in Empire. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, ultimate sidekick. Great choice. Great choice. I love it.
All right, so we got our first match.
All right. We're moving on?
Yep, go for it.
Thanks. My third choice for best sidekick. Well, I'm gonna give you a clue, actually,
okay,
as to the actual sidekick. And it's not a sidekick. I'm zagging again here, Bill Bant. It's sidekicks.
Ooh.
It's a duo.
Duo. Ooh, okay.
This is also a film from 1984. And here's a tagline. I'm going to give it away if I sing it, I'm going to give it away. I'll just say it. The heat is on.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Rosewood and Taggart. Beverly Hills Cop.
You got it.
Nice.
Absolutely.
Oh, that's a good
Beverly one. Hills Cop, 1984, directed by Martin Brest. Man, I love me some Rosewood and Taggart. Billy Rosewood and Taggart, played by Judge Reinhold and John Ashton. Lovable, lovable duo. I couldn't just choose one of them, so I went with both. Love these guys. I'll try to keep this short. Rosewood and Taggart are straight-laced cops that are supposed to keep an eye on Axel Foley, who's a Detroit cop who's just arrived in L.A., trying to chase down the killer of one of his best friends back in Detroit. And Axel's very much a fish out of water, but he's got his own aggressively bold investigative style that puts Rosewood and Taggart off a bit because they're trying to play it by the book. There's just some great scenes because there's a great arc in this. We watch Rosewood and Taggart being so straight-laced, and Axel kind of antagonizes them at first. There's the classic banana in the tailpipe thing, and then Rosewood and Taggart are staking out the hotel where Axel's hanging out, and Axel sends them food. They end up going – one of my favorite scenes is when they go to the strip joint, and this is where they start kind of bonding because a couple guys come in, and there are these thugs that come in with a shotgun, and – Foley ends up disarming him with the help of Rosewood and Taggart. So now they're working together a bit more and they kind of join forces in order to help Axel find the main bad guy and bring him down, who happens to be Victor Maitland, who's a drug dealer. And he's the one that had Axel's friend killed in the first place in the beginning of the movie. So it's all about the bonding between these cops. So there's a lot of good buddy cop action in this, but it's really about the chemistry. The performances, like they're just there's such a juxtaposition between Eddie Murphy's portrayal as Axel Foley and the way that Judge Reinhold, as you know, if you know how he looks, as we do fans of 80s films, whether it be Fast Times at Ridgemont High, which is, you know, and stuff like that, he's kind of goofy. And then you get Taggart, who's really by the book and strict, and they make kind of a good duo unto themselves. And the way they have to get loosened up by Axel throughout is great. And Axel really gets them to kind of follow their instincts and become better cops in a way. And ultimately, he teaches them how to be there for each other. And that's really all that matters. So in the end, we see Taggart and Rosewood go in all in to support Axel in his investigation of Victor Maitland, the bad guy, and to bring him down. And there's a great final showdown. And they put their lives on the line for Axel. And again, great arc. It's a great relationship arc. From the beginning, they're opposing. They become friends throughout, and then they're like basically saving each other's lives at the end. And it's a great cop action comedy film. It's one of the best. I watched a little bit of it today, Bill Bant. It really is one of the best. And they also come back in the sequel, Beverly Hills Cop 2, and they're badasses in that. It's great to see them return in the sequel.
Oh, yeah, definitely. That's definitely when you have a sequel and you have returning characters and you were excited to see those two back, and they used them well for the sequel. So that,
yeah, they're very funny. They're great comic relief in that, too. Yeah.
But, Taggart and Roseweed Rosewood, sir. Excellent. Excellent choice. That's a good one. I don't know how I didn't have that one on my list. I love Beverly Hills Cop. I don't know how I missed that one.
Oh, yeah. No, it's okay, man. Yeah. Just watching one scene. I watched the strip club scene, and I'm like, damn, this movie's good. Eddie Murphy was so great. And they're great, like Reinhold and John Ashton.
Yes. Hello, Bill Band here from the All 80s Movies Podcast to tell you about Factor Meals. Eating better is easy with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to go in just 2 minutes. You'll have over 35 different options to choose from every week, including Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Also, there are more than 60 add-ons to help you stay fueled up and feeling good all day long. Get as much or as little as you need by choosing your meals every week. Plus, you can pause or reschedule your deliveries anytime. We've done the math. Factor is less expensive than takeout, and every meal is dietitian approved to be nutritious and delicious. What are you waiting for? Get started today and get after your goals. Head to factormeals.com/80smovies50 and use code 80smovies50 to get 50% off. That's code 80smovies50 at factormeals.com/80smovies50 to get your 50% off today. Okay, so for my next sidekick, I will be super impressed if you get this one.
Okay.
I don't think you are. Okay, so the movie's from 1981, and the tagline is, "You'll root for them all, but you'll never guess who wins." The director is Hal Needham, who's known for doing very stunt-oriented films. There's usually a big-name 70s, early 80s actor that he usually has in his movies, and he is in this one.
Damn it. I know the director. I mean, I know his name. Okay. I have no idea.
There's a ton of big-name stars in this movie. You have... I won't even list the top ones, but I'll list some big ones. So you have Roger Moore, Adrian Barbeau, Jackie Chan, Terry Bradshaw.
Oh, wow.
Maybe this one will give it away.
Okay.
Burt Reynolds.
You'll root for them all, but you'll never guess who wins. Wow, this is, well, I'm already loving this pick, whatever it is. Oh, my God.
Huge 81 hit. I know you've seen it.
I'm just blanking. I'm failing. I don't know.
Farrah Fawcett, Dean Martin.
Wow, it would take me forever. I don't know. Give it to me, man. I have no idea.
The Cannonball Run.
Oh, God. Okay. I was thinking in the wrong direction. That did come into my head, of course. I mean, when I think of Burt Reynolds, I think of Cannonball Run.
Yeah. So Burt Reynolds, who plays J.J. McClure, who's one of the big racers on the Cannonball Run.
Yeah.
His partner in crime is Victor Prinzum, a.k.a. Captain Chaos, played by Dom DeLuise.
Outstanding, man. That's a great choice.
As a kid, I loved Captain Chaos. I was Captain Chaos 1 year for Halloween. That's how much I loved Dom DeLuise's portrayal as Captain Chaos and just this movie.
Hell yeah, man.
Yeah, in the first race, they used an ambulance as their car. So the Cannonball Run is an illegal cross-country race for X amount of dollars. And you can drive whatever you want, do whatever you want. And most of the racers have different disguises, like Dean Martin and Sammy Davis Jr. are priests driving around a Ferrari. Then you have Adrian Barbeau, I think she's driving a Testarossa, and their big thing is anytime they get pulled over is because they're luscious ladies. They just use their looks to get through. Then you have Roger Moore, who actually thinks he's James Bond. So he's playing a character who thinks he's James Bond.
Oh, I haven't seen this so long.
But Victor Prinzi, Captain Chaos, and J.J. McClure hates when Victor becomes Captain Chaos because it does cause problems, and it actually does cost them the race. Because I guess at the end you have to punch your card in at the very end, and they're literally running, and Captain Chaos is in the lead, and he hears someone needs help, and he runs off to help the person instead of finish the race first. But I didn't care. Captain Chaos is going to save the day. I'm all for it. He's a great sidekick to Burt Reynolds. And of course, they were notorious for at the end of the movie, they would show all the outtakes, and that shit was so funny too.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And just listen to Dom DeLuise laugh. Just listen to him and Burt Reynolds laugh
together. And Burt Reynolds has that great laugh, too.
Oh, yeah. It was just great.
Wonderful pick, man. What a great choice. And I'm so embarrassed not to have guessed that, like, right out of the gate when you started naming all the cast members, because it is such a loaded cast. I just was not even thinking. It's like when you play charades and you don't just your mind isn't open, or
we're putting undue pressure on ourselves trying to get these right.
Good job, Jason. Really, really good. Good job.
That's okay.
Really, really good choice. Dom DeLuise. You know, I haven't seen that movie in forever, and that is a very entertaining movie, and that was a big one for sure. And I did see it a lot as a very young kid, but I haven't revisited it maybe in 30 plus years.
Probably not until we do an episode on it.
Yeah, I can't wait to rewatch because it is a lot of fun. It's awesome. Great, great choice. I'm excited by that choice. So I got one more then. Just one more.
Okay, should I go again?
Yeah, exactly. Do it.
Okay. Ooh, I don't know which one to go with because I'm afraid we might have a possible match. All right, I'm going to go with the one I think we're least match on. So maybe we can go out in a bang here. So this movie was from 1985. So you went more action-oriented. I seem to go more comedy-oriented, it seemed like. The tagline for this movie is, "He always wanted to be special, but he never expected this." That's very vague. I don't know if you're going to get that at all.
Right, yeah, I have no idea.
If I give you the director, it's not going to help you either.
Okay.
The director was Rod Daniel. The lead actor in this movie, this will give it away. So this was technically his first major film, but it came out after another major release in the summer of 85. And this movie capitalized on that other movie. Is that making any sense?
Teen Wolf.
Correct.
Hell yeah, man. It's funny because I came across this and I was like, oh yeah, I just haven't watched Teen Wolf in so long. I didn't feel right choosing this particular sidekick. But if I'm not mistaken, is it Stiles? Is that the character's name?
Yes, it is Stiles, played by Jerry Levine.
Yeah, great. No, great choice, man.
Never say die. So that's his big line. And it's hilarious because he's the type of friend. You meet Michael J. Fox in this movie, and then you meet Stiles, and you say to yourself, how the hell are these two guys best friends? They are polar opposites.
Yeah, I love it. Stiles. What a great character name.
But I got to say, Stiles, man, that guy knows how to put on a party. He is high school MC party master. That's for sure.
Hell yeah.
And even he knows from the get-go that Boof likes Michael J. Fox, and he tries to put them together unsuccessfully in the beginning. He's just hilarious. He wears those hilarious shirts all throughout the movie. Stuff, you know, you really can't repeat. Stuff that would not allow you in Disney World, I'll tell you that much. You do not meet Disney World dress code if you're dressing as Stiles. Yeah, he's just hilarious. He's just super outgoing. It's like you can't understand why they're friends, but you do understand why they're friends. Michael J. Fox needs a Stiles in his life. You don't have to be reserved all the time. There is a fun side to it. That's why I went with Stiles. Everybody knows the Stiles.
Yeah.
But there's only one Stiles.
Right. Stiles Dolinsky. I actually looked him up here. Jerry Levine. He's memorable. Great choice. I need to watch this again because we had covered Teen Wolf 2 on our worst sequels of the 80s.
Correct.
He was missing.
Big time.
As was Michael J. Fox. But
yeah,
you're right. I think what gave it away too is like, because I remember that Teen Wolf was huge, just coming right after Back to the Future.
Yeah, they were literally 1-2 at the box office. Yeah.
Big, big year for Michael J. Fox. Huge, huge year. I actually just kind of want to go back now to see Teen Wolf again for Stiles, if nothing else. And also just because there is a character named Boof in this movie.
So. Yes.
Gotta love the 80s, Bill. You know?
I know.
Only in the 80s.
And it's so weird because neither of them, you really didn't do that much after that. I'm kind of surprised.
Oh, Jerry Levine, the actor?
Yeah. Or even Boof.
I was going to ask that too. It's like, what else did he end up doing? Because he was great.
Mm-hmm.
I have to look that up. But yeah. I'm sure we'll be covering Teen Wolf at some point a lot more thoroughly. So I'm down to my last one then.
All right. This brings us to our last sidekicks. And we're at the one. Are we going to match?
This is probably the most obvious one I have. It's huge. I could not, I mean, outside of either like Chewbacca and R2-D2.
Right.
This is probably as big as it gets. And this would be in my top three because I think of Al Powell, I think of Chewie or R2. And then I'm going to this one. This film was released in 1986. And Let's see if we got a tagline that won't give it away. This apparently was a tagline, but it doesn't really make a lot of sense. It's more like it sounds like it's a quote, but I'll read it anyway because it's ridiculous.
Okay.
Like it sounds like a quote. It's a solo mission. Yeah. And I'm going with him. I don't know if it can make sense.
Solo mission. I'm going with him.
That doesn't even make sense.
No, that doesn't help at all.
Tagline here's from the producers of Beverly Hills Cop and Flashdance.
I hate when they do that as a tagline.
It's almost lazy.
It's so cheap. So Beverly Hills Cop and Flashdance.
Right. Here's another one. Up there with the best of the best.
Okay. Yes. We're doing Top Gun.
Yeah. Got to do it, man.
Oh, that was my number six. Almost made the list.
I couldn't not go with Lieutenant Junior Grade Nick Goose Bradshaw. Goose. Talk to me, Goose. Yeah, played by Anthony Edwards. I didn't give you a chance to guess who the sidekick was, but I assumed you knew who. I think that was pretty easy.
Yeah, I had eight listed, and he was one of them.
Yeah.
I think because I thought you might use him that I didn't put him on there. But yeah, he would have been on my list.
Sure.
List if I was
yeah, absolutely. So obviously this character from Top Gun, 1986, directed by Tony Scott. So yeah, again, no brainer. It's Goose. No. There's two O's in Goose, boys. I mean, Goose is the quintessential buddy
mm-hmm.
to Pete Maverick Mitchell in this movie. He's not only his Rio, which I always thought they were saying real, as in like R-E-E-L, like real, but it's Rio, radar intercept officer. So Goose is the Rio and flying partner. It sits in the rear seat of the F-14 Tomcat fighter plane. But he's just the lovable, hilarious, wonderful best friend in this movie, man. The relationship is made so crystal clear, due in large part to Anthony Edwards' performance.
Oh, yeah.
Wonderful. There's so many scenes during the flight training, the schooling with Kelly McGillis, and they make jokes about their encounter with the MiG, you know, just yes. that classic sequence where Maverick, Tom Cruise, is like, yeah, you know, we gave him the bird. And then, of course, Goose yeah. chimes in and he's like, yeah, you know, the finger. And he flips off Kelly McGillis. And she's like, yes, I know what that means. And he's like, oh, no, I hate when it does that. I hate it when it does that. So many great scenes like that. Goose does have great one-liners in this. There's the classic Great Balls of Fire sequence with Goose and Meg Ryan, who's absolutely adorable, Kelly McGillis, Tom Cruise, and he's playing the piano, singing the song. And you just get a sense that not only are they best friends, but that they're brothers. It's more of almost as it's a familial relationship. And one of my favorite scenes actually from Top Gun is with the two of them, Goose and Maverick. It's really after they're basically close to being kicked out of the Top Gun Navy fighter pilot training school because of Maverick's antics, the tower flybys, the breaking the hard deck rule when they're going up against Jester and the dogfighting training. And Goose has to switch from being the fun-loving buddy to like the serious friend in this moment and has this come to Jesus talk with Maverick saying like, look, man, at this point, I just hope we graduate. And you see how much that affects Maverick. And you realize, again, that they're more than friends. They're family. There's just a lot of subtle moments that you can also attribute to good writing. But the relationship has to work in order for Maverick's arc to be believable and work. So not only does Maverick have to feel Goose's loss because, surprise, you know, spoiler alert, Goose dies in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
And it's probably one of the top 10 movie deaths of all time.
That's rough.
Just because how much we love Goose as Maverick's friend, partner, flying partner, sidekick. It's one of the most impactful deaths in cinematic history. It's just, it just is. Again, is just how great of a sidekick Goose is, but also how great Anthony Edwards is and just how amiable and lovable. So props to him. I don't know what else to say. What else can you say about Goose? I mean, so many great quotable lines that he has in the movie. I'm trying to think of more, but I don't want to spend too much time on it. We all understand.
That is a great choice, and it probably should have been in my list. He puts up a lot of shit for Maverick.
Right.
I mean, he could really be like, hey, I can't fly with this guy anymore. You got to find someone else. Like you said, there's a true bond between the two of them, and it falls under your criteria. He would take a bullet for Maverick, hands down.
Thank you for saying that. Yeah.
There's nothing else you could say. Like, if you're talking 80s sidekicks, most people would probably have Goose in the top three, and the fact I didn't put him in the top five. Sad, sad for me.
Hey, no. Hey, man, look, I think we have some great choices on this minisode because there is variety, and we have only matched on one in our top five.
Yes.
Favorite sidekicks. And, you know, some of these
we're trying to do a little variety.
I mean, yeah, we got to mix it up a little bit here. We don't want to just repeat a bunch of the same sidekicks. But yeah, for Goose, again, when I'm looking at my criteria again, you brought up a great point because he does take a lot of shit from Maverick, or he puts up with a lot of Maverick's shit because they're just great friends. And even when Maverick is in the wrong, you get the sense that Goose will have his back. He'll just have his back no matter what. Mm-hmm. And then behind closed doors is when he goes to Maverick and says, look, I know you're Duke Mitchell's kid and it was rough. You have this image you're supposed to live up to. But, you know, I thought we were chasing the Top Gun trophy when we got here. But now I just think, you know, I just hope we graduate kind of thing. It's like, that's that again is kind of that heart to heart that he has as a good friend and sidekick. Fills another criteria that I had where he gives Maverick kind of that advice or support and kind of puts him on back on the right path. Like he's the moral compass or he's his conscience in that moment, you know?
Yeah, he knows he can tell him that and not worry about brushback. And that's the type of friend. When someone tells you something like that, you're like, oh, I better listen.
Exactly.
If he's saying something like this to me, I need to take a deep look at myself. That definitely gives him ultimate sidekick status.
I like that, sidekick status.
All right, so for my last sidekick, once again, another comedy here. And this one's from 1988, and the tagline's going to give it away, but that's okay. You've been suffering enough. I'm going to give you a softball on this one. So the tagline is, this summer, Prince Akeem discovers America. Directed by John Landis.
I love it already. Coming to America.
Yep. And the sidekick is Semi, played by Arsenio Hall.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Another Eddie Murphy movie. I just realized that. We got two Eddie Murphy sidekicks in this one. And he is kind of assigned to go with Eddie Murphy, Prince Akeem, to find himself a wife in Queens. Because he has that great line. But where in New York can we find a woman with grace, elegance, taste, and culture? A woman suitable for a king. And then in unison, they both say, Queens. Little do they know.
Right.
But the two of them, great chemistry. Granted, you know, Sibby, I guess we could say is employed by Prince Akeem, but there's more to it than that. They are true friends.
Right.
They've probably been friends since they were little kids. He's just a great sidekick. He's there the whole ride trying to give Prince Akeem some advice. A great comic relief.
He's very funny.
He does realize once they get to New York and Queens, this is probably not the right place. But, you know, they're going to make the best out of the situation. And even when Prince Akeem goes to work at the McDowell's, he's there with them every step of the way. He's following Prince Akeem through this. He realizes this is what he wants to do. He wants to find himself a woman that has her own opinion. And it's not going to be basically a slave to him. He's not up for the idea at first, but he definitely comes around there at the end.
Right.
Good sidekick there.
I absolutely love this choice, man. I think you nailed it. And I love the fact, you know, we're talking about variety in this particular minisode and the fact that you did choose comedies and I ended up going with more of the kind of mainstream action. So I love the fact that you're choosing these because these comedies. It's an all-timer, Coming to America.
Oh, yeah.
And it holds up. I mean, as far as I can recall, and I watched it not too long ago, and it was still, I mean, it's a funny movie. Wonderfully written, wonderfully directed. Eddie Murphy still at his peak. And Arsenio Hall, he goes kind of toe-to-toe with him in their scenes. He's right there with him. He's great.
Oh, yeah.
Very funny. And yeah, his character, he's very indulgent. He still wants to indulge, and he wants to live it up in America. He's quite, you know, opposite ends of what Eddie Murphy's trying to achieve and accomplish. But you get a sense of their relationship, where they had come from, and that Arsenio Hall he's there for him when it counts. He kind of has a little mini arc unto himself there.
Right.
Trying to come around and figure out that, oh, what Eddie Murphy is doing is actually righteous.
Yeah, he doesn't get it at first. He's not happy about what's going on, but he's sticking with them throughout and then definitely comes around by the end of the film. Sidekick with a little arc.
Love it. Still one of my favorite moments in that movie. I just have to call this out is when as King, I think, yeah, it's like halfway through the movie when he's walking along the pier or something. And it's the two old guys from Trading Places.
Oh, yes.
That cameo that they make. And he throws them. Does he get throw the money? Money? That's still one of my favorites.
Mortimer.
Little Trading
back.
Places. Right.
Yes.
Crossover. Mortimer. That's great. Great, great, great choices, Bill. Great stuff.
And if there's any sidekicks from the 80s that we missed, hey, please let us know. Tweet us. Email us.
Oh, I've got, two major honorable mentions.
Okay. Who do you have?
Well, as we talked about, Chewbacca's is in there for me.
Yes.
Definitely. Come on. It's Chewie, co-pilot, Millennium Falcon. Anyway, Cameron from Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
He was on my initial list too.
Love his arc in that movie. He's got so many great scenes.
Ferris Bueller, you're my hero.
Yeah. When Cameron was in Egypt's land,
let my Cameron go.
Swing better. Kennedy, 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 swing better. What's the actor's name? Why can't I think of his name now? And he was great in Speed.
Oh, my God.
He has a great little supporting role in Speed.
Oh, yeah. He's one of the passengers on the bus.
So let's look that up. In the meanwhile, I will mention Wade Garrett from Roadhouse. I was really tempted to put him in there. Good old Sam Elliott.
He would have got knocked off because of my parameters.
Right. And then another honorable mention I'll throw in is from Black Rain.
Oh, Andy Garcia's character?
Andy Garcia. Yeah, I thought of him. I was like, I was a big fan of his in that movie. Tough character death in that movie. Cameron, Wade Garrett, and Charlie were...
Alan Ruck.
Thank you. Thank you. Alan Ruck.
See, I knew he had a small, short last name, but Rudd kept popping in my head. And I'm like, well, it's not Paul Rudd. But I knew it was a small name like that, Alan Ruck. Another one that I could have used multiple times, but two of them we already... was John Candy. Could have used him in Splash.
Of course. Yeah. Great call.
Also as Barf in Spaceballs.
You could make a case for him in Stripes.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like, oh yeah, definitely could have done a lot of John Candy. Let us know who we missed. So I think that about wraps up for this week's episode, minisode. As always, thank you so much for listening. Please take the time to subscribe, give us a review, and rate us. Really appreciate the support. If you want to reach out, you can email us at allamesmoviespodcast@gmail.com. Please send us your feedback, questions, or recipes to share. You can follow us on Facebook, Meta, at All 80s Movies Podcast, or tweet us at Podcast All 80s. Next week, we'll be discussing the adventure comedy Inner Space, starring Martin Short, Dennis Quaid, and Meg Ryan. Until then, have a totally great week, everyone.
Thanks for staying up with us. Good night, world.
Murder in America is a true crime podcast that covers stories from all 50 states, including stories of mass shootings, serial killers, and lesser known murders. Do you find yourself doing more research after listening to a true crime show? Well, Courtney and I used to do the same thing, and that's why we created Murder in America. Our podcast dives deep into each case. Our storytelling will make you feel like you're right there within the case with us, watching it all play out, and we do not shy away from the graphic details. If you're a fan of true crime, then listen to Murder in America on Spotify now.